And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and let's get right back into the news. Actually, we're going to start with commentary before we get back into the news. This one's entitled, A Question of Ethics and Enforcement, was written by Meredith Taylor. On the southern border of Yellowstone, outfitters eager to please their clients lure trophy bull elk from the sanctuary of the national park into the Bridger-Teton National Forest, and then they kill the animals. Encouraged by the lack of enforcement by Forest Service and Wyoming Fish and Game officials, the outfitters routinely ignore prohibitions against the waste of edible meat and the use of salt baiting. That's where you put a block of salt out and the animals come to lick it. This fall, I took two horseback trips to this spectacular area inside the Teton Wilderness to witness for myself the industrial-scale salt baiting that has become a national disgrace. This area, known as the Thoroughfare Region, is as far as you can get from a road in the lower 48 states. On anyone's yardstick of beauty, it is breathtaking. Wide, willow-covered meadows flank the Yellowstone River and are home to elk, moose, deer, grizzlies, bison, ermine, wolves, coyotes, geese, bald and golden eagles, blue-winged teal, great horned owls, and assorted migratory songbirds. I saw or heard all of these creatures during my recent visits. Mountain man Jim Bridger roamed this landscape in the early 1800s. President Theodore Roosevelt also left his boot tracks on its soils. Wilderness advocate Bob Marshall climbed its trails and breathed its crisp air. Today, Bridger, Roosevelt, and Marshall would presumably be shocked to find the area scarred by dozens of salt bait craters up to 4 feet deep and 50 feet across. Game trails radiate from the salt baits like spokes of a wagon wheel. Some salt baits are placed just steps from Forest Service trails within 100 yards of the National Park boundary, and less than a quarter mile from major campsites where metal boxes have been installed for keeping human food away from bears. What does it say about the land ethic in the Thoroughfare that campers are strongly encouraged to keep clean sites, but only a short distance away, hunters lure elk to their deaths using salt, and then leave perfectly good elk meat to rot on the ground? At one site that National Park Service Ranger Bob Jackson said had been salted this fall, we found the carcass of a bull elk killed just hours before our arrival. At least 45 pounds of edible meat remained on the animal, including the sirloin, tenderloin, brisket, rib, and neck meat, clearly a violation of Wyoming game and fish laws prohibiting wanton waste of edible meat. One outfitter's guide claimed to have packed a ton of salt into the Teton Wilderness in a single year. The scale of salt baiting is already huge and will only increase if it is not stopped now by enforcement of existing regulations and laws, but the Bridger-Teton National Forest, the Wyoming Game and Fish Department, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are simply looking the other way. If these agencies would take their own regulations seriously and enforce them, the salt baiting problem could be eliminated quickly. Polls and votes in some states have shown that most of the American public, including a large percentage of sportsmen, find hunting over bait a despicable hunting practice. But some outfitters, focusing instead on their clients' wishes for an easy trophy, insist on salting. What challenge is there in luring an animal to bait? Where is the fair chase of this practice? Are threatened grizzly bears attracted to salt baits? We don't know. One agency spokesperson recently told a newspaper in the Northern Rockies, there is not a shred of evidence that bear mortalities are linked to salting. That's a true statement, but a major reason is the lack of investigation by the Forest Service and the Wyoming Game and Fish Department. Government agencies and conservation groups have spent considerable time and money trying to reduce human and bear conflicts during the hunting season, yet the illegal salt baiting of elk creates an artificially high concentration of hunters and bears amidst the elk carcasses. It follows logically that baiting is increasing the chances of bear-hunter conflicts and mortalities. From the shadows of lackluster enforcement, this sad breach of hunting ethics is finally coming to the light of day. Media, public, and agency attention is growing. If citizens follow through with letters and phone calls, we are hopeful that a solution may be near. And here's the address to write. John Bowman, Wyoming Fish and Game Director, 5400 Bishop Boulevard, Cheyenne, Wyoming, 82009. Once again, that address, John Bowman, B-A-U-G-H-M-A-N, Wyoming Fish and Game Director, 5400 Bishop Boulevard in Cheyenne, Wyoming, 82009, or his email address, jbaugh@misc.state.wy.us. That's jbaugh@misc niffyhamilton.state.wy.us. Here's another address, Niffy Hamilton, N-I-F-F-Y, Hamilton, Supervisor of the Bridger-Teton National Forest, P.O. Box 1888, Jackson, Wyoming, 82190. That's Niffy Hamilton, Supervisor of the Bridger-Teton National Forest, P.O. Box 1888, Jackson, Wyoming, 82190. Or you can give her a call. Her phone number, 307-739-5510. That's 307-739-5510. I don't have an email address for her, but another person in the office is Schrotz underscore Michael. That's S-C-H-R-O-T-Z underscore Michael / R4 underscore B-T at fs.fed.us. That email address again is Schrotz, S-C-H-R-O-T-Z underscore Michael / R4 underscore B-T at fs.fed.us. And this commentary was written by Meredith Taylor, who serves as the Greater Yellowstone Coalition Field Representative in Du Bois, Wyoming. And if you'd like to contact her for more information, her email address is metaylor@wyoming.com. That's metaylor at wyoming.com. Her phone number, 307-455-2161. And I'd like to thank the Grassroots Environmental Effectivist Network for providing that commentary. Let's move on to fee demo. Folks don't know what fee demo is. It's a fee being charged by the Forest Service for using Forest Service lands. Chalk up yet another shiner for the U.S. Forest Service, and let's give a cheer to the lady who planted it on them. The following AP news article appeared in this morning's press. It tells of a woman who was given a fee demo ticket and refused to pay. She instead raised a stink and made it clear she'd rather fight the ticket in court. So instead of letting this lady be heard by a judge, the United States Forest Service stuck its tail between its legs and dismissed her case. The local U.S. attorney stated there was doubt the government could have collected the $50 fine. Let's move right to the article. Feds back down over parking fee. U.S. won't persecute woman over $5 fee for parking at Sawtooth National Forest. Associated Press, the federal government has declined to press a case against an Oregon woman who has steadfastly refused to pay the $5 fee to park her car while she hiked in central Idaho's Sawtooth National Recreation Area. The decision, made for pragmatic reasons, headed off a court test of the validity of the fee demo program that is being tested at the Sawtooth. Assistant U.S. Attorney Terry Durden said there was doubt the government could collect the $50 fine the Forest Service assessed against Marjorie Hoy of Bend, Oregon, after she refused to buy the pass. Considering the limited number of resources in the federal courts, Durden said on Wednesday, "We look at the likelihood of success. That's what they pay us to do." Hoy was driving from Jackson, Wyoming, back home to Bend on September 6th when she stopped at the Iron Creek Trailhead in the Sawtooth National Recreation Area to take a walk. She returned 3 hours later to find a ticket on her windshield for not buying a user pass. She ignored it, as well as the notice of a $50 fine that came 3 weeks later, and a mid-November summons to appear in federal court in Boise on the matter. Instead, she objected to the imposition of the parking fee in a letter to the U.S. Attorney's Office. Hoy maintained the fee was discretionary for forest users and that her hikes were spiritual, not recreational in nature. The Sawtooth National Forest adopted the parking fee, $5 for up to 3 days or $15 a year, in May after complaints about the general use pass that it tried to require of recreation area users the year before. Congress gave the Forest Service authority to try fees on a pilot basis as a way of generating additional cash for maintenance. In her letter, Hoy pointed out that up to a year ago, a federal judge in Los Angeles refused to uphold citations against Robert Barsh for refusing to obtain a user pass under another demonstration program. The judge said future citations would also be dismissed until the passes were made mandatory and not part of a demonstration or test. The Forest Service Law Enforcement Supervisor Steve Lipus said 175 people were issued notices of noncompliance in the Sawtooth National Forest last year, but 85% of them purchased a parking pass after being told to. Lupus did not know how many people have gone to court for the violation, but he conceded that in Hoy's case, we're not going to take anything to court and waste taxpayer money if we don't feel we have a good case. So don't pay to park in the woods. Help end commercial logging. Did you know that over one-third of all national forest lands are identified by the Forest Service as crucial to maintaining aquatic species? That's just one more reason to end the Forest Service's commercial logging program. Write a letter or call your member of Congress through the Capitol Hill switchboard. The number 202-224-3121 and urge him or her to co-sponsor H.R. 1396, the National Forest Protection and Restoration Act. That's H.R. 1396. The number again, 202-224-3121. And the United States, the United Nations, the World Bank, and environmental protection groups have decided to jointly study the Earth's ecosystems and explore their appropriate uses in the future in a 3-year project to be launched this year, organizers told Kyoto News. The project, entitled Millennium Ecosystem Assessment, will be the world's first integrated international science assessment of the condition and future prospects of the world's ecosystems, the project's steering committee said. The committee said it plans to provide the results of the study to international organizations and governments for use as a reference when formulating policies. An area of forest roughly equivalent to the state of Georgia is being stripped from the earth every year, and we are losing the equivalent of 2 football fields of tropical forest every second, a top-level U.S. official said. Action against illegal logging and increased use of satellite imagery are among several ways the United States plans to protect and conserve the world's forest, said David Sandelow, Assistant Secretary of State for Oceans, Environment, and Science, in a speech to the National Press Club. Sandelow announced that the U.S. government will work to fight illegal logging and trade in illegally harvested wood. Both activities are destroying forest ecosystems, he said. The National Aeronautics and Space Administration launched 2 environmental satellites in December that would allow routine production of accurate forest maps. The Landsat 7 and Eros Terra satellites should allow routine production of accurate forest maps, providing a new tool for natural resource managers and scientists that can be made available over the Internet. This year, he said, the United States will host an international conference on illegal logging in Southeast Asia's Mekong watershed to shine a spotlight on the global problem and find new ways to stop it. While we are starting with one region willing to tackle the issue, we hope other regions will follow the example of openly discussing illegal activities with a view to identifying and implementing practical preventative measures. The Clinton administration will soon begin implementing the Tropical Forest Conservation Act, which authorizes the reduction of official debt owed to the United States by countries with significant tropical forests in exchange for conservation measures, Sandelow announced. Alec Watson, Vice President for International Conservation of the Nature Conservancy, reacted to this policy move with approval. We are particularly excited about the positive potential of the Tropical Forest Conservation Act and the bipartisan effort that went into its creation. We believe this act, if funded properly, can result in enormous progress for efforts to protect critical forests. And a U.S. Senate bill already approved by the House of Representatives would reinforce a system of tying school and road funding into logging revenues in Oregon and Washington. An analysis by the Wilderness Society shows the bill will provide a dramatic increase in funds for counties where logging is a major source of revenue. We were astonished to see how much money a handful of counties could receive under this bill, the Wilderness Society senior resource analyst Mike Anderson said. This bill would lead to ill-advised management of national forests in the Pacific Northwest and across the country. The bill would also create local committees to select national forest projects designed to generate money for the counties, and would require the counties to spend 20 or 25% of their payments on these projects rather than apply it directly to schools and road maintenance. Payments in Oregon and Washington counties have declined 44% over the past decade due to reductions in national forest and BLM logging, especially in old growth stands. What's interesting, said Anderson, is despite the decreases, the counties generally are doing quite well. In fact, total county revenues in Washington have doubled since 1991, with those timber payments now amounting to just 0.7% of the total. The current system is irrational, said Michael Francis, director of the Wilderness Society's National Forest Program. Why should the education of our children be tied to the number and size of trees that are cut in their counties? You want to read the report? Go to the website, www.tws.org/newsroom/logging.htm. And 1 million acres of canyons and mesas north of the Grand Canyon have been made into a national monument. More than 71,000 acres of prehistoric ruins north of Phoenix, Arizona, and thousands of tiny islands along the California coast. Call them America's Millennium Presence. The 3 new national monuments created recently by presidential fiat. 92 years ago to the day after President Theodore Roosevelt created the monument at Grand Canyon, paving the way for the creation of the Grand Canyon National Park, President Bill Clinton signed proclamations creating three more monuments, the Grand Canyon Parashant National Monument, the Agua Fria National Monument in Arizona, and the California Coastal National Monument. The president also signed a proclamation expanding the Pinnacles National Monument in California. These newly protected areas are already federal land and, beginning at the day of the signing, will be managed with the overriding purpose of preserving their unique natural, scientific, and historical features. This is not about locking lands up, Clinton said. This is about freeing them up from the pressures of development and the threat of sprawl for all Americans for all time. The president toured the Arizona Monument areas by helicopter and then in a ceremony at the Grand Canyon used his executive authority under the 1906 Antiquities Act, proposed by President Theodore Roosevelt, to create the newly protected areas. The act gives presidents the authority to designate as national monuments any historical landmark, historic and prehistoric structure, or other object of historic and scientific interest owned and controlled by the government. Said Clinton, it's legacy for the children of America for hundreds of years into the future. It's not a bad gift to give them. And what's the problem with temporary roads? Well, they're not all that temporary. In December of 1997, the Forest Service revised their estimate of National Forest Road Network from 380,000 miles to 440,000 miles. The extra 60,000 miles? Unauthorized and unengineered roads, including the ubiquitous stealthy temporary road. The Forest Service has no method for tracking temporary roads, nor does it include public highways, state, county roads, whatever in its inventories. However, temporary roads cause just as much and as long-lasting impacts in national forests. Temporary roads? Don't count on it. The Forest Service is supposed to get rid of them, but does it? Ask your Forest Service. And the U.S. Federal District Court Judge Clarence Brimmer has issued a ruling upholding the U.S. Forest Service's 18-month moratorium on road building in many of the nation's remaining roadless areas. In February 1999, the agency imposed the moratorium in order to reevaluate its approach to managing more than 373,000 miles of road that now cross national forests. About only 18% of these roads are maintained by the U.S. Forest Service, and studies show that the roads can cause major environmental damage. The temporary moratorium was challenged in court by the Wyoming timber industry. The industry had claimed that the moratorium could only be adopted on a Forest Service-by-forest basis for all 124 national forests. By rejecting the timber industry's claim, Judge Brimmer upheld the U.S. Forest Service's authority to embark on a system-wide rulemaking procedure. And getting into plant news, the photogenic and popular barrel cactus, Ferrocactus cylindricaceus, lives only in a narrow band of latitude and only at the 3,000 to 3,800-foot elevation. Photogenic because of their symmetrical and elliptical shape, they are disappearing by the tens of thousands from the protected California and Nevada desert. Jose Antonio Mendoza and Javier Escobar of Los Angeles County, California, were convicted last spring of poaching cactus. Sentenced to 8 months in jail, they must pay $94,710 for the illegal taking of federal property. But the thefts continue. We are seriously concerned about the loss of these beautiful plants, the National Park Service Superintendent Mary Martin says. It's not a question of the plants dying, it's a question of the plants being taken. Investigators for federal agencies said the harvested plants are used to make candy. Cactus are now extinct in certain regions of Mexico due to illegal harvesting and clear-cutting of the plants, said Tim Salt, Bureau of Land Management, California Desert District Manager. We are now seeing areas in Southern California where cactus have been illegally cut, and we are very concerned. Barrel cacti are protected by state and federal laws, and it is illegal to cut and harvest them from public lands managed by the BLM and the National Park Service. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, you could get major fines for doing that. Defenders of Wildlife says it has paid $50,000 to compensate ranchers for livestock losses from wolf and grizzly activity in 1999. The conservation group buys tolerance among Western ranchers for wolves and grizzly bears with its financial compensation program. The 1999 compensation includes $35,000 paid for wolf incidences and $14,000 paid for grizzly occurrences. Of the wolf compensation, $2,000 was paid in Arizona for predation by recently reintroduced Mexican wolves. Some ranchers have returned compensation checks, citing support for wildlife recovery efforts. We're replacing shoot and shovel and shut up with prevent and pay, said Hank Fisher, Defenders of Northern Rockies representative, who initiated the wolf compensation program in 1987. It's important to note that we're developing ways to prevent predation and that we step in to alleviate financial concerns when predation does occur. Toleration toward individual grizzly bears is especially important, says Minette Johnson of Defenders, who administers the grizzly compensation program. Because grizzly bears reproduce so slowly, reducing mortality is essential to their survival. And unfortunately, some U.S. companies are promoting the illegal hunting of great apes in Africa, conservation groups warn. A new report by Rainforest Action Network, RAND, shows that many African hardwoods sold in the United States are logged and imported by U.S. companies. The influx of loggers into the rainforest and increased access for hunters via logging roads has transformed bushmeat hunting. Practiced on a subsistence level for centuries, it is now a lucrative commercial venture that kills endangered forest species, especially great apes, for human consumption. The Primate Conservation and Welfare Society, RAN, and other organizations have developed a poster and action kit aimed at educating citizens on the plight of Africa's great apes. When fighting to save endangered species, said PCWS founder and president Hope Walker, it is easy to blame the lax conservation practices of certain African countries, but it is the practices of Western-based timber companies that are threatening Africa's great apes. And on the same note, extinction is looming for 25 endangered primates. 25 species of monkeys, apes, gibbons, lemurs, and other primates could soon become extinct, according to the world's most knowledgeable primate experts. All primate species survived the last 100 years, but a report issued recently, by the Conservation International and the Primate Specialist Group of IUCN, the World Conservation Union Species Survival Commission, lists the 25 primates now most at risk. Here they are: the golden bamboo lemur, the Lac Alatra bamboo lemur, Perrier's sifaka, the silky sifaka, the golden-crowned sifaka, the golden lion tamarin, the black lion tamarin, the black-faced lion tamarin, and the buff-headed capuchin, and the northern miriki, the yellow-tailed woolly monkey, Miss Waldron's red colobus monkey, white-naped mangabey, Schlater's guinean, the drill, and the Cross River gorilla, the Sanjay mangabey, Delacour's langur, the Katba Island golden-headed langur, the gray-shanked Duke langur, the Tonkin snub-nosed monkey, the Henan gibbon, the Sumatran orangutan, the Javan gibbon, and, of course, the mountain gorilla in Africa. Well, that's about all the news we have time for tonight. If you'd like to get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzef@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or send your letters to Earth First Radio at P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And please send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. If you'd like more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address is P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. That's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. And you can hear Earth First Radio live on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, every Thursday at 8 p.m. in Santa Cruz, California. Or you can listen to Earth First Radio on your computer at the World Wide Web anytime at radioforall.web.net. That's HTTP, radio, the number 4, all.web.net. You'll need a sound card in your computer, but the software you need is free on the website. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Be sure to ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz and is affiliated with the Earth First Radio Network. Portions of this newscast were prepared with the help of Eon Blues. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis. Thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. And we're going to check into a little music here. This one is a little tune off the off of Uncle Dennis's Earth First CD number 1, which is not available in any store. But anyway, this was written and performed by Phil Free off his sometimes located No Frills cassette. This one is called Yuppie on the Mountain.
Somewhere where the life is wild and trees embrace the sky, coyotes howl to the moon as she slowly traces by. Far from the concrete in the hills of frost and snow, life weaves its web as the lights burn on below. But there's a yuppie on the mountain from the land of corporate greed, buying, selling parasites, filling a consuming need, filling that consuming need. Yeah, there's a yuppie on the mountain. Everybody run, thinks it's a game of Monopoly, won't stop till he's won, won't stop till he's won. And the wheels will roll, here to sell my soul. Someday they'll sell it back to me. Yeah, the time will come when it's all been done. With the world to gain, what have we done? What have we won? 'Cause there's a yuppie on the mountain from the land of corporate greed, buying, selling parasites, filling a consuming need, filling that consuming need. Yeah, there's a yuppie on the mountain. Everybody run, thinks to game of Monopoly, won't stop till he's won.